Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Simone Riscala, and you are listening to the Endow Podcast, a conversation not just about the feminine genius in general, but about cultivating your particular feminine genius through the Catholic intellectual tradition and intentional community.
Reading of Created for Love, Chapter 1, which is the Endow High School Series, Book 1. Chapter 1, The Dignity of the Human Person. 1, The Human Person. Quote, man has been created in the image and likeness of the Creator. The divine image is present in every man. It shines forth in the communion of persons. End quote. From the Catechism of the Catholic Church, 1701 to 1702. The truth that we, as human beings, inherently deserve love and respect simply because of what we are is at the root of all our relationships. But what makes us as people different from any other things or creatures in this world? And how does it follow that we each innately deserve to be treated with love? The Church, through the Scriptures, leads us toward an answer. The two creation stories. At the very start of the Bible, we read of God creating the world with the sky, the sun and moon, the stars, the earth and water, and all living things. On his final day of work, he creates human beings. Quote, in his own image, in the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. From Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. Giving them dominion over all other living things that he has created. And he saw everything that he had made, and it was, quote, very good. From Genesis 1, 31. The Bible doesn't stop there, however. Next, we find another, slightly different creation story. In that second story, God forms the man from the dirt and then gives him his own breath of life. See Genesis chapter 2, verse 7. God then proceeds to make the earth grow for the man, placing him in the Garden of Eden to work and live. He says, quote, it is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him a helper fit for him, end quote. From Genesis chapter 2, verse 18. So God makes the animals, bringing each to the man to, quote, see what he would call them, end quote. From Genesis chapter 2, verse 19. None of them, however, is the helper God seeks to give him. We can imagine the man's exhaustion, loneliness, and disappointment here as he realizes that none of these animals are quite like him. So God puts the man to sleep, and while he sleeps, he takes a rib from the man's side and forms it into a woman. When the man wakes, God brings the woman to the man, who exclaims, this, at last, is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. From Genesis chapter 2, 23. Finally, he has someone with whom he can share his life, the work of the garden, and the joy of discovery. Finally, he is not alone. Each of these stories tells us something about why every human being deserves to be loved and respected simply because she is a human being. The first story tells us that we are made in the image of God, male and female together, reflecting who God is, just as a snapshot or painting reflects to us some small part of its subject. This story tells us that, in some way, we look like God, both through our community, as male and female, and through our capacity for reason, shown here as having dominion over the animals. The second creation story fleshes this out further. In bringing the animals to Adam, the Hebrew word for human being, God helps him to realize that he is unique. He alone among the animals has the power to name, to speak, to think, to reason. But he is alone, and it is not good. Human beings are made for community. They are made for love. And so, when, at last, he recognizes someone who is like him, yet different, he can rejoice in her. he can see God's image in her, and she can see God's image in him. In this beautiful exchange, we come to better understand the uniqueness of human dignity that makes all human beings equal, all deserving of and rejoicing in the same kind of love that the first man showed to the first woman. Human dignity. These two stories help us to understand ourselves as human beings and learn about our Creator, who made us in His image. Because we are each a reflection of God Himself, human dignity is our undeniable inheritance. This truth is at the heart of why the church fights for equal treatment for every person. When Jesus comes, he reinforces the truth of human dignity found in Genesis, illustrating it again and again through his teachings and through every one of his interactions with others, no matter their social status. Our worth as humans is not measured by others, but by our identity as children of God, adopted daughters and sons alongside Christ the Savior. Human dignity is the basic reason we fight for refugee rights, volunteer in soup kitchens, or take the time to talk to an elderly neighbor. It is the reason Mother Teresa walks the streets of Calcutta to be with the poor and the dying, and why Martin Luther King Jr. held peaceful protests for equal rights. It is the reason we are called to love our neighbors day in and day out. Discussion questions. Number one, how would you define human dignity? Where do you think it comes from? Number two, what does the book of Genesis tell us about human dignity? Where does it come from? How do the two creation stories help us to understand it? Number three, when is it hardest to see someone's dignity or worth? When is it easiest? The image of God, an analogy. We take pictures, make images of things that we like, of moments that we want to keep forever. We take pictures of ourselves, of others, of all kinds of things, because ultimately what we want is to save or capture the moment or the object we love. When we talk about being made in God's image, then, we enter into the mystery of how God's own love could lead to each one of us existing as diverse pictures of Him. Jesus is the perfect image, the whole and complete copy of the infinite God, reflecting Him in all things. Through the Son, we are made in God's image and likeness as small snapshots of the beauty and goodness found in God Himself, capturing a certain perspective or quality of His to showcase to all. Because of this, we are all made good and each deserving of love. The church says this in a more direct way. Quote, every person from the first moment of his life in the womb has an inviolable dignity because from all eternity, God willed, loved, created, and redeemed that person and destined him for eternal happiness. End quote from the Catechism number 2500. In other words, each individual is invaluable and irreplaceable because God crafted her, chose her, and wanted her. Because of God's nature, being made in His image entails much more than the kind of two-dimensional picture presented in this analogy. His images are real people. And the things that make us a true reflection of God go beyond our appearances. Our images will have some similar qualities because we are all pictures of the same person. But since God is infinite, there are a lot of very different people in the world. Each person reflects God's goodness in a unique and beautiful way. Each person deserves to be loved simply for who she is. And each person is loved wholly and completely by her Maker, who seeks a relationship with her. Reason, free will, and the ability to love. Let's dig a little deeper into what it means to reflect an image of who God is. From Genesis to Jesus, we've seen a few of these common details come to the forefront. Two of them that the church has focused on are reason and free will. One of the important functions of reason is the capacity to know right from wrong. Because of free will, we can choose for ourselves whether to seek one or the other. Reason and free will also create the possibility for love. Because of them, we are able to form relationships with other people that mirror the relationships within the Trinity. God's love is summed up in creation. It is joyful, playful, abundant. He freely chose to give us life too, so that we could share in the joy that comes with loving others. At the same time, he opened himself to hurt. He chose vulnerability and gift over power and force. God knew that without the ability to choose, we could not truly love. Even if we used our reason to understand who he was, without free will, we could not love him. We could merely serve him as slaves. Only the person who freely chooses to work for another's good can truly love. God wanted us to be able to choose him, just as he chose to create each one of us. And so he took a chance, giving us the ability to choose to love him, while knowing that we might also choose to reject his love. In creating us with both reason and free will, God made it possible for us to love him as he loves us. This relationship with him is what he most wants from each of us, but he won't force it. Instead, he invites each of us into a relationship with him and waits always for our free response. Bringing it home. We've talked about photographs as an analogy for being formed in the image of God. But perhaps a more accurate comparison would be to think of artistic masterpieces made by the hand of the Creator. Because we were created in the image of God, our inherent worth can never be taken away. No matter how beaten down, sick, or sinful a person is, she still has the dignity that belongs to every human being. We were each willed into existence by God. This simple fact means that we deserve to be loved and respected. Though sin can harm this image, in the same way that dirt and maltreatment harm a painting, our dignity can never be lost. It is within our very being, intrinsic to who we are. This also means that even though others can treat us with less dignity than we deserve, nothing they do can actually remove our dignity. As Catholics, there is also a great comfort in knowing that the dirt of sin can be cleaned away in the sacrament of reconciliation. This understanding of human dignity is foundational to the Catholic faith. We cannot come to know who we are as women or as individuals until we accept that we are each precious in God's eyes. At its heart, Christianity stands for the dignity of each person. Discussion questions. Number one, how does seeing yourself in the image of God affect your view of yourself? Number two, why is free will so important to our relationships with both God and other people? Number three, what does it take to be creative? How does reflecting on what God created give us a window into who God is and what he is like? Section two, seeing the dignity of others. Quote, in Christ we are one body. We live in a communion that encompasses heaven and earth. End quote, from the UCAT 146. Living examples, the saints. When we think of a saint, our first response is often to imagine an extremely holy person from the distant past. The saints seem far away, not only in time, but also in relatability. But nothing could be further from the truth. The saints were and are humans with virtues and vices like any of us, and they have lived in every period of history. A saint is simply someone the church recognizes as being with God in heaven right now. A canonized saint is someone the church holds up as a person to imitate because he or she demonstrated heroic virtue during their lifetime. The church remembers and honors many saints. However, there are countless more saints in heaven that we don't know by name. The church continues to canonize, i.e. recognize, as many as possible. Since there are as many ways to get to heaven as there are people, certain saints resonate better with some people than others. Even if we don't know much about a saint or don't feel a particular affinity for them, realizing the humanity of the saint can help us to find our own path to God. Saint Josephine Bakita, quote, "O Lord, if I could fly to my people and tell them of your goodness at the top of my voice, oh, how many souls would be won," end quote, from Saint Josephine Bakita. We can talk about the concepts of sainthood and human dignity all we want, but nothing communicates their meaning like a real example. Saint Josephine Bakita's life highlights how it is impossible to have one's human dignity stripped away. Born in Sudan in 1869, Bakita's childhood was shattered when she was captured and sold into slavery. This experience made her forget the name her parents had given her. She was named Bakita, which means fortunate, by the slave traders. After being sold several times and mistreated for years, she ended up as a slave to an Italian family. In Italy, she was the nanny and friend to the child of the family, Mimina. When business concerns sent the child's parents to Africa, Bakita and Mimina stayed in Italy with the Canossian sisters. The sisters taught Bakita about God, and she said that, quote, she had experienced him in her heart without knowing who he was, end quote, since she was a child. Quote, seeing the sun, the moon, and the stars, I said to myself, who could be the master of these beautiful things? And I felt a great desire to see him, to know him, and to pay him homage, end quote. After taking classes with the sisters, Bakita was baptized and given a new name to signify her new life in Christ, Josephine. She and Mimina continued to live with the sisters until Mimina's mother came to bring them both to Africa with her. At this point, Josephine Bakita courageously insisted that she wanted to remain with the sisters. She felt that she had to stay in Italy in order to follow God's will for her, and she was able to do so because slavery was illegal in Italy, so the family had no legal way to force her to come with them. After discerning a call to religious life, she became a Canossian sister in 1896. She remained in the convent for the rest of her long life, eventually becoming Mother Josephine Bakita. She was remembered for her remarkable kindness to everyone who came to the convent, especially the children, who loved her and came to hear her stories. She suffered terrible illnesses towards the end of her life and died surrounded by her sisters in 1947. Saint Josephine Bakita is a powerful example of how someone can be horribly treated and yet still maintain an amazing grasp of the fact that her dignity and worth as a person could never be stolen. Discussion questions. 1. What is the significance of Bakita's name? What is the meaning behind your name? Why was it so horrible that Bakita forgot the name her parents gave her? What is the significance of receiving a baptismal name for her and for you? 2. How did Saint Josephine Bakita first experience God's existence? Have you ever felt the sense of God's existence that St. Josephine described? What helps you to see that God exists? What makes you question it, and why? Bringing it home, quote, a person's rightful due is to be treated as an object of love, not as an object for use, end quote, from Pope St. John Paul II. As a child, Bakita was seen only as a thing, an object to be used by others, a means to be exploited in pursuit of others' selfish desires. But she knew that there was more to the story. She knew that she was worth more. Though she had every excuse to hate the people who tortured her, she clung to a fundamental truth instead. She chose to see God's hand working in her life, and it set her free to choose a path of love. Josephine's story gives us a clear picture, therefore, of how even the extreme actions of other people can never take away our human dignity. This exploitation caused her incredible pain and suffering. Though the scars we bear are rarely as obvious as those left by slavery, anytime we are used by someone else, it leaves a mark. We know when we are being disrespected or taken advantage of, even when we tell ourselves that it's okay or no big deal. It sticks with us, grating on us. We know we are worth more. Today, there are many ways, big and small, within both our communities and our larger society, that people exploit one another. In our own daily choices, we can fall into using others when we become so focused on ourselves that we forget other people's humanity and worth. We can forget that they deserve love. Often we may choose this kind of gradual path away from God without fully realizing the implications. Whenever we choose to talk to another person only because she knows all the gossip, for example, or we ask someone to help us cheat on a test, or we hang out with grandma only because we know she will buy us clothes, we are using these people. It doesn't take much to slip into this way of thinking and to focus solely on what we want. Yet when we do this, we also harm ourselves. In acting purely out of self-centered desires, we fail to live up to the image of God in us. We take instead of give. We reject a relationship with God instead of pursuing it. The problem is that the more we take, the more we want. We can never be satisfied. Fortunately, our relationships can be so much more than this. When we take the time to appreciate the unique personhood of another, we are rewarded with true relationship, with love. This love is what we are created for. Question one. At what times have you felt tempted to use others rather than to see them as persons? Can you think of some ways to avoid falling into that trap again? Question two, what would you say are the building blocks of your best relationships? In those relationships, can you think of ways you have done well at it respecting each other's dignity?
If this episode was helpful for you, please consider sharing it with a friend or two. We would also appreciate it so much if you left a rating and review so that more women can discover Endow and our mission to help women cultivate their unique feminine genius. Please also check out the link below to learn how to become a monthly donor to help defray podcast production costs. And of course, if you'd like to talk to me about joining or starting your own Endow group, please email me at simone.rascala@endowgroups.org. And remember, you are the heart of Endow.